Before I start today's intro, I need to ask a huge favour. I've realised that most of our returning listeners haven't subscribed, so whether you're on YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or all the rest of them, go hit subscribe, and in return, I promise to keep bringing bigger and bigger guests. Now that's out of the way, today's guest was meant to be my second guest ever, and we've finally made it happen. He's an amazing filmmaker, and an even better human. Here's Jeff Rangold.
So, Jeff.
Welcome. it's taken a while, my friend.
Yeah,
it's taken a long time.
This one has taken a bit to get.
I remember when we talked about this back in the day, what, a year ago?
It'd be close.
Yeah, that this is what I want to do. And I was supposed to be the second guest.
Yeah, I think
you're the second guest. First or second. Your wife actually said, just get Jeff and that's it. You don't need anyone else. Yeah. I was like, that's good. So now you're at almost 15, 16. So it's been a bit. But I've been away, as you know. So.
Yeah.
So we get it all going. So, yeah. So I'm excited, bro. I'm excited.
Excited, eh?
Yeah.
Let's run it back. Let's go back to
my life. It's going to take like an hour just for that.
Yeah, no, we'll come up through where it all started.
Being from Canada, from Toronto, I've always, since I was a kid, wanted to be in showbiz. I guess that's a good way to say it. And I went to university, went to film school, which is, if people from Canada would know, it was called Ryerson Polytechnical Institute or Ryerson University, which now has been changed because of all the wonderful political things happening in the world. And Egerton Ryerson, who was something in education, was a slave owner back in 250 years ago. And we can't have that. We can't have someone's name on a university. So unbelievable. So it's been changed to that. It's going to be changed again. But I love film school. I learned a lot. Now, this is going back to several decades. Not that I'm that old, but and when I'm saying, I majored in film, it was actually 16 millimeter film. Video was there. Video was another department. But and I did learn, I think, my fourth year. So learning everything about film, 16 millimeter editing, shooting on these old Bell and Howell, 16 millimeter things, and we'd throw cameras up in the air. Sound would all be recorded separately, of course. And it was great. It was a good intro to learn. And, you start going on little productions and stuff because your teachers and professors are trying to help you. So I did a few interesting things, which I don't think ever made it. Oh, one thing made it to the CBC. But other than that, I don't think anything ever happened, which is fine. And I decided, okay, I want a job. I want to work in the industry. And I sent my resumes out to all the distributors, which like Paramount, MGM, Columbia, TriStar, all of them. And I actually heard back from Columbia in publicity. And I'm like, what the fuck is publicity? I want to be a producer. I want to be a director. I've never heard publicity. What do you do? So I went in for an interview. This is in Toronto, and the distribution office in Toronto, which basically follows LA and New York, and went for an interview and didn't get it. But she said, the woman at the time, don't worry. I've got a friend at MGM who's looking for somebody. So, I'll get back to you. And I'm like, yeah, here we go. Right. The next day I got a phone call. Oh, can you come in for an interview? And I went in twice and I got the job as a publicist for MGM United Artists. And I'm like, what do I do? What is this job? And I was there for like 4 or 5 years, and that's how everything started, sort of in Toronto and, of course, the studio in L.A. And going to the studio was like, wow. And this is, going back to 1990, the early 90s, Thelma and Louise and the Rocky films and what's his name? Timothy Dalton, who was Bond then and all that. And it's the old school, and it was amazing. I mean, it really was a lot of fun. The commissary, you hear all these things back in the 30s and 40s and the 50s and in MGM and the studios, and it was like that. Columbia was next to it, 10,000 West Washington Avenue, Culver City. It's completely different now, the industry, which we'll get into in a minute, but I had a great time. I met a shitload of people. I work with a shitload of people, which I know you're going to want to know who. And look, I'll say, I'm not going to say anything horrible about anybody yet. But look, my favorite person was Mel Brooks. He was doing a film called, 1991, called Life Sucks or something like that. I can't even remember. He came into Toronto at that time, into the theater, because he always had to see the reactions of people and all that. And it was a great audience, thank goodness. And then we took him out for dinner, and he just talked to everybody in the restaurant. And the guy's nuts. If you ever saw his movie High Anxiety, that's him. He's nuts in a very creative way, and he's still alive. I think he's 97 now. But just sharp as a tack, the funniest guy. His movies back then, if you know, Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, all that, couldn't even get done now. It's just so politically wrong.
Yeah.
And the things that are in it. And they're funny. Like, you still watch and you go, uh-oh. And even when people post things online and they're like, oh, you can't do that now. You can't say that now. It's like, screw that. It was funny. Get over yourselves, people. So he was actually probably one of the best. I did work with an Australian director, Fred Skepsi, on a movie 1990 or 91 again, maybe. The Russia House with Sean Connery and Michelle Pfeiffer. And that was the producer, I believe, was Canadian. And the nicest man. All I remember is in his hotel room with all the other publicists and all that, he had to phone his wife here in Australia because of the time difference or something like that.
Yeah.
Lovely man. Lovely man. And the movie didn't do any business, but lovely man. Reese Witherspoon worked with her on her first theatrical movie, which was called The Man in the Moon. And who knew that this 16-year-old kid would become this Academy Award winner? Look, she was fine. I think she was a kid, you know. And her manager, who was there with the other kids in the film, we're talking like 17, 18, 19. She was lovely. She was a nice lady. I can't remember her name. Industry is very different. So she was, I mean, even looking at thinking of her now, I thought, oh, this is a girl who kept on saying, oh, shut up all the time. Because she was a kid. But she never would I think that she would become that big. I think she had Blonde. Is it Blonde? No. What was that movie she did for the studio? The character. What was it? She was the blonde chick at university. There were two of them. Anyways. Blonde something. I think of Blonde Ambition. That was Madonna. Never met Madonna. She did a movie, though, for us. Horrible movie. horrible movie. And she was supposedly okay to work with, but her movies didn't do well. That one didn't do well. But all the other people, everybody was fine. Like, you know, they're there to do their job. They're very professional, you know, like Jane Fonda and all these people who would come in. What's his name? John Malkovich, Gary Sinise, Jane March for another film festival. They come in, they do their job, and that's it. You know, they're not stupid. I'm sure it's a lot different now, but as a publicist back then, you're sort of, you know, making sure, and you're talking to their publicist, depending if it's, you know, Dustin Hoffman, Tom Cruise, how high they are. You've got to show them all the questions you're going to ask, and then they decide, no, 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 no. And remember, because I was a publicist for the studio, not for the person. So the actors, producers, directors have their own people. It's a big, big thing. It's like, how many people do you need to walk into an interview? Everybody was fine. One of my favorites was Sean Penn. He was there for his first directorial debut on a film called The Indian Runner, which was a beautiful film, at the Toronto Film Festival. And nicest man, very short actually, but the nicest man who played pool for I think like two or three nights. He was then engaged to Robin Wright, and she was there too, and just really nice, but just a cool guy. And everyone, oh, he's going to kill the photographers, he's going to smash them, and because that was sort of his thing. And it's like, well, these paparazzi, man, you're in front of people's faces all the time. Of course they're going to get a bit. You know, I think the laws have changed a little bit now, probably not. But so look, I loved that. I had a great time, and then I said, let me come to Australia, because why not, before I die type of attitude. So I sort of took, a leave of absence for about 3 months, which turned to a year, to come to Australia to see Australia. Now, when I came, it was sort of Fox Studios was just coming in. So, you know, and the industry here was really taken off. So, you know, Strictly Ballroom, Babe, Moulin Rouge and all that too. And I thought, oh, this will be good. There's an industry here. Wow, I can work in here. Yeah. No, it wasn't that easy. It's not even paying your dues. The industry was just so clicky then, and probably pretty much now too. Then, and unless somebody died, you can't get their job. And again, too, I was a bit more specialized in theatrical stuff. I didn't know TV. I didn't know anything. Merchandise, I didn't know any of that stuff. I was only trained to do theatrical, you know, marketing and stuff. So when I finally did get a job, it was with my first big job, which was 4 years, I think, 4 or 5 years at Southern Star Endemol, which back then they were doing, and it was TV. And again, they had a film division and merchandise and all that too, but I was mainly doing a lot of the TV. Blue Heelers, Water Rats.
I remember my nan watching Blue Heelers when I was young.
That's it. It was old, and I didn't know any of these shows because I wasn't from here, and I didn't know who Gary Sweet was, and I didn't know any of these people. I'm like, oh my God, they're famous. Well, famous for Australia, you know. Yeah. So, and that was fun, and I learned a lot. And then I just thought, you know what? I just want to learn as much and grab as much knowledge, and I did. Then went to Perth for a brief time, which was kind of fun. Owned a gym there because of the whole background in fitness and health and all that. So,
what made you buy the gym?
The gym was sort of bought through a friend, and let's say he actually already owned it. And I said, look, I'll put some money up for it as well, because it's something I've always wanted to do. Sort of being, oh yeah, this will be fun owning a gym, and it wasn't. The area it was in was fine. But there's just so many overheads of a gym, you know. And it was actually a specialized gym. It wasn't just a PT gym. It was actually a gymnastics gym, more for kids. So I think at one point we had 350 kids in it and the family. So while the parents would be doing their thing, which was the Les Mills classes and all that too, you know, body balance and step and all that, the kids were doing their stuff. So it actually worked out pretty good. And there was a little cafe in there. But again, it's just so many overheads. Insurance, even though I think Gymnastics WA was, you know, paid for some of that. Fitness Australia paid for some of it. But it's just, there's always, because you're renting the space, renting the gym. Now, a gymnastics gym is not like a PT gym. I mean, you have to have huge, huge ceilings because you're hanging ropes and things off of it and all that too. And it just, it took its toll, and basically got rid of it. And that's when I had started my little journey at Channel 9, which was actually in Perth, which was kind of just by chance. I think I saw an ad, which doesn't happen, of people looking for more salespeople, I guess, and went and spoke to the gentleman at the time, who's unfortunately now passed, and got a job. And I was there, 7.5 years doing TV and learning TV and doing TV shows and specials and learning everything about the industry, from writing scripts with the presenters to being on site to auto cue to everything back in the day. Not going that far back. And it was fun. I loved it. And I thought, okay, then come back to Sydney. So now we're getting closer to now. and honestly, it's tough, because unless you... Look, everybody and their dog can start a production company. Anyone can do anything. You know, it's not that hard. It's just getting the contacts out there and getting good things. And then what do you do with it? Back then, it was free to air. You know, Foxo was around. You know, you still had pay-per-view. You had stuff like that. But nothing. Streaming wasn't around yet. So that's why I think now the industry, it's so good in one way, because there's just so many outlets for things like this.
Yeah,
and shows that I'm trying to do and all that, because you don't have to go to the old archaic, no offense.
The old guard.
No offense. You don't have to do free to air, which you probably won't rate that well. You probably won't get that much money for it. And it's easier because you have more platforms to work off of. And that's my whole thing. So I've been shooting, as we know, as how we met, you know, a bodybuilding TV show, an MMA fighting TV show, a boxing TV show from the ex-boxer here, and all the stories that are involved. And that's what I love doing. And that's how I've been doing what I've been doing and sort of making a living and getting out there is just getting good stories, making good stories, and sort of pitching my shows and all that too. And there's a lot of amazing stories out there. There's so many things that people don't know of how, especially athletes like yourself, man, boxing. I mean, you know, the whole idea is how do you balance everything in your life? You know, your missus, the family, nutrition, training. How do you balance all that to get to your goal, which could be just a personal best? It could be owning a gym. It could be running a business. It's hard, man. And I think a lot of people out there, they're just look at social media, and they become these instant whatever they become. And I'm like, but what have they done? Like these people, they're posing for something or they're doing something. Totally different industry. And look, I'm not saying I don't like it. I just think, yeah, look, I get it, but why is social media so important right now? Why do the numbers, and I know that talking to sponsors and all that, the person has to have at least 10,000 followers. Why? Because most of them are fake. Most of them aren't even real. Yeah. So
before we move on to the social media side,
yeah.
Question everyone's going to want to know.
Oh, God.
Was there any funny business in the showbiz
back then? There's always,
because you worked for LA and stuff, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, look, I
was it. Well,
people who know me now.
Yeah, let us know that stuff.
Oh, look, in LA, and I'm not going to say the whole thing with drugs and all that because I kind of stayed away from all that in LA. And I actually fell for this publicist. She was this gorgeous blonde, gorgeous chick or whatever. And I was with my boss. Where the hell were I? Can't remember. I was with my boss who was a female. In a limo with her, I'm not going to say her name, and we were like cuddling and very not professional. And again, this is a long time ago. And I remember my boss looked and said, do you guys want to take a room out somewhere? And I thought, oh shit, what am I doing? But, oh look, crap goes on all the time. You can't stop it. I mean, you're not their babysitter. The unfortunate thing you do become as a publicist, you do become a babysitter. So when so-and-so, let's say Sean isn't, you know, oh, man, you've got to go to bed. You've got to wake up early to go to this press conference, and you're knocking on his door at, you know, 8 a.m. and, oh, my ear aches and I've got, you got to get the doctor up here and da-da-da. It's like, and that's what you do. I remember Donald Sutherland, who was amazing, very tall too, and he was doing a movie at the time, a TV movie, which in his contract, because he was promoting something else for us, it said you're not allowed to mention anything to the thing. And nobody did, because you have to somewhat respect it. Entertainment Tonight and all those people, they'll try to put something in and try to do it in an interesting way and so they're not caught. But he started talking about it, and we sort of on the side saying, shh, no, and he just did it. So, yeah, but... You know, who's sleeping with who and who's doing who? Oh, yeah, it's of course it did. People, look, it's their lives, it's their personal lives. Very different now. Like I said, not everybody and their dog had a camera on hand. So if you're seeing so-and-so fooling around with so-and-so or walking in or out of a hotel together, which could have just been harmless anyways, you're not, you didn't have a camera with you. You didn't have a recording. Mobile phone with you. You can't take photos and upload it, and all of a sudden, you know, oh my God, look what's going on with the, look at these guys in LA. And you
TMZ.
Know, yeah, exactly. Well, TMZ was around. They were actually kind of fun, but, you know, National Enquirer was the big one back then, and you didn't squash things. It wasn't like back in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and you had to pay newspapers and all that to squash a story and buy them a house or a car, yeah. which they did back in the old days, presumably. You see it all the time. And my boss just said to me, and let's say a martial artist who came to town who basically wanted, and this is the only thing I'm going to tell you because I know what you're like. Let's say a martial artist in the movies, and there was quite a few at that time, who basically just wanted women and cocaine. And I'm like, I actually said, that's sorry, mate. That's not my job.
Yeah.
No, sorry, man. I wasn't mate yet. Sorry, man. It's not my job. I said, go ask a taxi driver. Yeah. And that's what they did, you know, and that's what they all did because, you know, we're not supposed to be helping them do stuff like that. Maybe in the old days they did that, you know, oh, please, now you just go online and ask, oh, can I get this? Where can I get this? And I'm sure it's all pretty easy. But look, you're only as good as your last film, and it's the same now too. So, you know, everyone had to be pretty, not weary. Everyone has to be pretty whatever. You can't be a dickhead. You can't be too much of a dickhead, you know. Things like Tom Cruise, I never worked with him. I've heard stories of, you know, you couldn't look. I think it was even here at Mission Impossible. He shot Cocktails in Toronto, and I didn't hear anything bad about and anything horrible about him. But you know, I did. There was something about in the contract, if working on the production, you couldn't look at him in between takes and stuff like that. For whatever reason. Strange. I mean, there was just weird things like that. And again, these are things you heard, whether or not I never saw it, as in show me the contract, you know. So there's always rumors and things like that. But it was a fun time. I'll tell you, it was a fun time. It'll never go back to, it'll never be like that now. There's just too many. Everybody's their own critic now. Everybody, you can, as you know, you can go and do your own reviews online, and people do it. People do it on Instagram and social media and X and all that too. And hey, where would Trump be without X, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's called X now, isn't it?
Back to, you touched on the crazy political stuff and...
Yeah, we love the political stuff.
Jeff here's from Canada, one of the best...
I don't want
to say best, but I'd say... leading force behind some of the crazy political stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go into how crazy it is?
Oh, look, I mean, I literally just got back a couple of weeks ago from being in Canada for a couple months of my dad. And unfortunately, my mom passed away last year, which was a pretty horrible thing. And so being home and sort of seeing what's going on in the government and things are just escalated so much there. And not to go into any horrible things and glorifying anything, but, you know, the Bondi thing that happened here is sort of a regular recurrence, especially in the States, unfortunately, and in Canada. And you hear about it, and it's done and dusted, and that's it. And just not to sound flippant and all that, but it's done. It just, unfortunately, it happens a lot, especially in the States, of course, because of the gun laws. Our gun laws in Canada are pretty much the same as here, so you're not going to be getting... someone going and killing, there are, but it's not like it seems to happen, unfortunately, in the States too often. So I was actually pretty surprised to hear how long it took for everybody to grieve and for the police to show if that one woman came and all that, and just people's attitudes, because things like that, and even friends at home, oh my God, you know, nothing happened. How come it took so long? I said, because things like that don't happen here.
Yeah.
And when they do, it just, I mean, I actually thought things would have changed a little bit from the Lint, because I remember that, the Lint
siege.
Hostage. Yeah. And that was, I mean, no one knew. And social media wasn't what it was back then to what it is now. And you didn't hear reports the second, you know, something happened. So that was just crazy. That was just a crazy time. And I remembered extremely well. And I was working for a production company at that time, too. And thinking, and it was in the city, so couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't do anything. So, but yeah, look, everyone in Canada, look, if there was no sports, people would be, you know, if the hockey wasn't on, you know, if the Raptors playing basketball wasn't on, if, Canadian football, I never really followed it too much. And in the States, it's the same thing. So I think you have to be a big sports fan in Canada and especially in the States because...
To stay sane.
To stay sane. Yeah. And it is fun. I mean, I did go see the Raptors, and I saw the Leafs, of course. And it's just great. It's just so good. Everyone's in there for 2 hours. You don't have to worry about shit that's going on in the real world. And it's fun, and you just get lost in it. And
well, that's why the Colosseum was built, the Colosseum in Rome. It was to distract everyone of the political shit show. Yeah, but
they still throw people to the lions.
Yeah, I know. But you know
that was
I mean?
The entertainment thing. People are getting eaten up and all that. Yeah,
that was their entertainment. Yeah. It just has balls or pucks.
Yeah. I think you need it, though. I think you need it. You know, and the whole thing with the Olympics coming up with all the shit that's going on. Oh, do we have to have the Olympics? And, well, why not? And I think knowing athletes and what they do and how they prepare. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, look what happened with the last Olympics. That, you know, it was because of COVID and all that, and it stopped for about a year. What was it? A year before they were able to do their own stuff. I think it was the following year. If I'm not wrong.
Yeah, it was delayed.
And can you imagine being an athlete sort of in limbo, and you've been training. Same when, not to go into politics, and I hate you for doing this, but I remember I was in school in 19, you probably weren't even born, 1980 Olympics, which was in Russia. And that's when Russia invaded Afghanistan back in the day. And the old timers will remember all this, not that old. And they said, and Canada and the States, you guys didn't boycotted the Olympics. And I just thought, now again, I was a kid at school, so you're not thinking that much, but oh, the Olympics, because the 76 Olympics were just in Montreal. And that I remember somewhat as being a little kid. The 80, oh, I'm in school, and everyone's, wow, so we're boycotting, why are we boycotting it? Oh, because they invaded, and no one even knew, because we were quite young. Why? Why would Canada be doing this? And the States, and Australia didn't. So it was weird. I remember that like yesterday. I still remember why the athlete. And I'm thinking, holy shit, you got to wait another 4 years to compete again if you were an athlete going for long distance, whatever it was, running or whatever. It's quite interesting, you know, back then. Now, I mean, look, it's COVID, which we won't even touch COVID because it was such a fucking pain in the ass.
It was a fuckery.
It just, this country compared to, I mean, when I told my family then, I can't come to Canada because my mom was quite ill with dementia and I wanted to go see her. And that was 2020-21 and you can't go. You can go, but you couldn't come back. Yeah. That was the thing. You could pay, I think it was like $18,000 to get on a flight to go to Canada, but I could not be guarantee any flights that would be coming back. Unless you were a sports figure or an entertainment person who was coming into Australia to do whatever they were doing.
I think
Elvis was being shot here at the time.
All that thing with Novak Djokovic.
Mm.
Like, that was just insane. And turned out it's like a flu. Like,
well, it's exactly. I mean, it's...
I had it last week. I was sick for like 12 hours.
Yeah. Well, it hits me. And look, I had it. I remember I was shooting a bodybuilding comp in 2022, and I caught it. And I think I was... when things started opening up more so and all that. And I'm like, ugh. And I just thought, yeah, it's a bad flu. And that was it. Like, you don't know. I mean, it affects people differently.
Yeah,
and all that
it's strange.
So it was, yeah, it wasn't, that wasn't, yeah. When you catch the flu now, oh, is it COVID or whatever? Are people still testing for COVID? What's the point?
Yeah, there's no point.
Yeah. So
the biggest fear I have out of that whole thing, it's the implications of the mental health later on down the track, like old matey over here at Bondi, maybe that might not have happened if we didn't take the crazy measures we did.
Well, what do you think happened changing over to you? I mean, what did people do? And even in Wollongong was very different from, I mean, where I live, you know, we couldn't go out. We had... you know, you had the curfew. You had, I think, you can go 5 kilometers.
I was the first suburb out of Wollongong's LGL's clusters rural, so we had like free rein to go wherever.
Oh, wow.
We wanted. And we could even go into the LGAs and go home. So,
well, how was that? See, that's
like, but my sister in law and brother in law live one town over, and they were stuck in.
Yeah, see, like what? Like this flu thing, is this going to creep over?
Yeah.
Creep over the signs and the clouds? Yeah. And all. I mean, it was ridiculous. And again, look, the only thing I can say, you know, not positive, but, you know, no one knew what was going on. The world, nobody knew how bad it was going to get. So you had to listen to the authorities, and what they said was God, basically.
I think a lot of it was...
But I remember
them playing golf.
I remember coming in and when we could finally leave, when was our prime minister still Was Scott still there?
Scott Morrison.
I don't know if he was still. I think he was almost out, but he then allowed, because it was, yeah, he was the one in charge of what planes can come in. So I took one of the first planes out in January 2022, I guess it was. And it was kind of, it was American Airlines, which I didn't know actually flew in, and they just started flying 2 weeks ago at that point. And the plane was half empty. And man, I remember landing in Toronto and getting, and again, remember when you, at that point, you had to have, I think I had 3 shots at that point, because you can't travel. You couldn't go on a plane unless you had your yeah. flu shots, your shots, and the booster as well. So I had 3. Had to show your papers. You actually then the day before, because you I was flying into LA and then transferring over, you actually had to have a paper from you had to go get tested within 24 hours. And they were doing it at the airport as well. They took over the parking lot. So you get tested, they get your thing. You have to go at least 3 hours before you get your results within those 3 hours, and you're negative. Well, you hope you are, because you can't get in the plane if you're positive. So everybody on the plane is, of course, negative, and everybody's wearing masks because you had to wear masks, except for eating, of course, or whatever. And you land in LA, which was okay, and I think it was a couple hours, then land in Canada, and they made everyone to take another test, and then they actually stuck me, well, us all had to go into whatever for 5 days. We weren't allowed to leave. I said, but why? Why? This is, and it was middle of winter as well. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And you had to actually report every day, do a video conference with the quarantine people. And I said, this has got to be the most ridiculous thing. Everybody on the plane is negative. You know, I'm not allowed here because what, and it just, and it's funny now being back home. All that shit that they did and wasting money and the app that they had, which it was like $60 billion or something. It was all ridiculous. I mean, it's all come back now saying, fuck, what a waste of time.
Crazy waste of money.
How stupid. And I still can't believe, you know, I think I stayed home for one day and I said, screw that. Sorry, Canada. And I had to go get my rental car and I had to do this. So, and too bad. It was just ridiculous. I just thought, come on, guys. And in the States, I don't think there was actually any, there's a lot of things were open, as in restaurants were open, like takeaway and all that,
yeah.
And outside. Again, most of them weren't open because of whatever laws. But remember, too, it was winter, so who's going to be standing in the snow outside? You just get takeaway. So very different times, man. And, you know, you think, what if something like that happened back in the 80s or all that, or even in the 90s, you know, like, can you imagine without social media and all that? Can you imagine how
that would have been?
Everybody would have been stuck inside. Everybody would have been parent. Like you do what you have to do. You wouldn't know that there's other views and theories and things out there.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. So anyways, it's all good.
Enough of the political.
We're all wiser now for the the next thing. But no, I didn't know that your family were you're on the cusp. That you couldn't go, or your sister couldn't go, or whatever. I thought, how stupid.
Yeah, so I was traveling back at the start of the pandemic. I was still working my trade job, and I was coming all the way to the city.
See, and but you were allowed that, weren't you?
I was allowed to come all the way to the city and then go all the way home every day.
Yeah.
And I could go to any shops, I could go anywhere I wanted. But it was because my license said I lived in the right suburb.
But how stupid. Like, it's just so... You lived in the right.
Yeah, I lived in the...
I'm with the scum, I guess.
Just far enough away.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Let's go into the...
That's crazy.
We're talking about the social media stuff.
Yeah. Social media.
The weeds.
Look, and to be honest, you think... Social media, I think, is good. Oh, look, I wouldn't be here, mate. We wouldn't have been friends.
You touched on the fake followers and stuff. And I personally, I know how deceiving it can be. But to normal people, they don't realize that.
No, correct. And I know.
It's a lot of smoke and mirrors.
When Instagram, now I started Instagram, gosh, my assistant started because I said, I can't be bothered with social media. I think it was 2017 I started my Instagram account. And not knowing, there's a bit of fun and stuff like that. And she was like, well, no, you do film, you do video, you do stuff. You should put it on there and all that too. Not knowing anything about what social media was all about. I mean, Facebook, everybody had that. And I hardly even bother with Facebook now. But I was like, okay. And you go on it, and it's like, oh, my God. And then you're meeting people. And all I was getting were, because you're like this newbie on it, all these people, oh, pay me 100 and something a month, and you can get 5,000 new followers, a day type of thing. And I'm like, what the hell why do I want that? I couldn't care less. Until you start working in it and start saying, oh, wait a minute, okay, like we said before, oh, companies want you to have 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 followers because, you know, you can promote the water, you can promote this and all that. Well, what kind of nonsense was that? And that's when I said, but why would somebody who sells shoes in Guam, who's following me or something, let's say for an example, be wanting to buy water in Australia? Like, I just went, it just didn't make sense. I mean, my whole thing was trying to target people overseas and production companies, of course, and studios and all that. Yeah, have a look at my work and what do you think of that and all that. Sort of the same with LinkedIn, I guess, as well, to a point, and Facebook to a point. But I thought Instagram was the best thing out there. And until you learn how to work it properly, I guess, is that a good word? And I don't go on it all the time. I don't put a lot of stuff on it because I don't want a lot of people knowing what I'm doing, as in, you get other people, let's say film people and all that, they'll go in, they'll see what I've done and copy it and do the exact same thing. And let's say go to a company that I've done some stuff for and say, oh, I can do it cheaper for you. You know, I'll do it for $200. I'm like, what? And they do. People do that all the time, man. Yeah. And look, it's just putting yourself out there and making a go at it. And I get it, but you know, there should be a bit of common decency, I guess, too.
Yeah.
You know? But again, you know, for the shows I do, and a lot of it's through word of mouth. A lot of it, I don't handpick people. People say, oh, look, you got to talk to this person. They've got a great story. You've got to talk to, you know, and go into the comps, like that one I did with Sonia. It was the bodybuilder who I met in, actually the day I got COVID, in the comp in down the Shire. The bodybuilding comp, and I just remember I was changing batteries or something. I was taking photos, doing something, and her mother came up to me and said, oh, what are you doing? You know, what's this for? And I said, oh, look, I'm just doing this little show. I'm trying to get it together, and I just need good stories. Oh, you should talk to my daughter. She's died 3 times on the table. You know, she's got da-da-da-da. And I went, what? And all of a sudden, she introduced me to her husband, who I sat next to, and her coach, who was about 10'2". And all that. And then she came out after the end, and I said, oh, look, I'd love to interview you next time. And she's sort of in, I hate saying, the middle of Queensland, really. I thought it was actually Brisbane or Gold Coast, but it's not. The middle of Imbal, Queensland. So I've gone a couple times, interviewed her, and the things here. And it's probably one of my favorite pieces, which I'm putting together in a show. Just because it's very raw, it's true, it's not made up, it's not like a 19-year-old kid who wants to be a bodybuilder and he's thanking everybody and kissing everybody's ass. And she's not like, she used to be a police officer, her and her husband. So it's coming from the heart. Not, those are the stories I like, and that's how I can see social media being a good venue to actually put stuff up to, and I show that to a lot of people, especially in the studio, I should say studios in LA, and even people here, and think, what do you think about it? You know, da da da.
Well, that's why I like doing this type of long form stuff, because I think it's definitely.
Well, everybody's been, I mean, that's the funny thing, because when we met ages ago, it seems like 20 years ago now, man. And you were telling me about this, and I just thought, okay, how is it going to be different?
It was an idea.
It was an idea. Yeah. How is it going to be different? Well, we have a few ideas still. How is this going to be different? And what was funny was, and you had the poor gentleman who passed away, was it last week or the week before?
Yeah.
And I just thought, how good that you actually are having some amazing, amazing people who are telling fantastic stories, you know? I mean, I want to interview you, as I did.
Yeah.
But that was more for your product and your brand and all that too. And we had a hoot, you know. We had a hoot.
Everyone was saying, "Oh, how's it going to be different? How's this? How's that?"
Well, I don't do. I've done one podcast. I don't do podcasts. You're lucky.
The whole idea behind this is just to get real people and speak about real stuff.
Yeah.
And it works.
It does. It does.
Everyone's sick of the bullshit. No one, like, people are waking up to the fake personas, and people, they've got a real hunger for realism.
Yeah.
Well, you want stories.
You want stories. You want people who have actually had something to say. And I think it's like a Rocky. You know, you're getting these people who had, and same with Stallone as well. You want people who have a dream and they want to get the dream out there. And okay, how can we do it? Back then, you write a screenplay, whatever, and you pitch it to the studio. It's very different. Now you just do it and you send it to everybody and their dog. And you know, there's still a few. It's not that easy, but it's who you know, and it's always like yeah. that. It's who you know type of thing. And look, I know a lot of people now who are trying to get things, especially in this country, getting things paid for through, let's say, government associations or government funding associations, and it's very tough because unless your name, sorry, they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And I've seen that firsthand, and it's very hard helping people. And keeping and, you know, whatever. And them sinking into, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And, you know, people just stop. And forget the mental health part, which is a very big aspect. I don't mean like that. But just you know, it just goes on yourself thinking, well, maybe I'm just not good enough. And it's like, you got great material. You've got great ideas. Just go out there and do it. So that's why I like, and YouTube is a good thing too.
Yeah.
And a lot of people get found on YouTube. A lot of actors I know, a lot of groups do and all that. And I said even, well, Cobra Kai, I mean, that was, you know, that was a YouTube thing before somebody at one of the networks saw
it.
Yeah, and so you just don't know. You just don't know. So it's just believing, I think, in yourself. But there is a lot of... When I like, and we talked about this before, you know, I would talk to you saying, oh, you know, I've got this idea that let's go and do it because you're amazing. You'll do everything like that. Or you're a fool listening to me. You'll do everything like that. But when I'm, you know, and I tell people in the States or in Canada too, I say, oh, I'm doing this idea. Everybody's so positive. Everybody's like, oh, that's great. That's great. Amazing. Here you say it. It's just, it's not negative, but it's just, oh, yeah, okay. And
in Australia?
Yeah.
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 We got
yeah.
a thing called tall poppy syndrome.
But why is that, mate? You tell me.
You tell me.
I can't tell you. You're born here, mate.
There's some weird culture
yeah.
that's not spoken about, but it definitely exists. Mm. And as soon as someone tries something out of the box, it's cringe. Or as soon as someone is trying to do something to get ahead, there's this thing where everyone's like, get back in line type thing. And it's fucking disgusting.
I did, I'm not going to say what it is.
You would have experienced
the
complete opposite in LA and stuff.
Oh, well, everyone's just so positive and about, oh, it's getting a bit more political of what they want to see now and people like that, which is another time.
I'm talking about the complete culture around doing stuff.
Correct. I mean, people are just more open over there. Oh, that's great. Let me see it. Yeah, send it. I remember meeting this gentleman on the plane after the Toronto Film Festival. This is last year. And he said, oh, yeah, that sounds amazing. Here's my card. Actually, I don't think he gave me a card. Here's my Instagram. Here's my website and all that, too. And it's just amazing. I was just on a plane. And maybe I'm driving the guy nuts for 5 hours on the plane. But here I had this idea, and I'm not going to go into it, but let's say it was an amazing idea. It actually came out of COVID. And I told a few people, and somebody actually did it. And someone is actually doing it now. It's about interviewing and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, my God, I can't believe somebody actually stole my idea. And to be honest, I actually did start it with somebody during COVID, which was awful because they had to sort of keep us in this little thing in the corner with the cameras and all that too. And it looked like shit anyways, but the intent was there. So yeah, somebody took my idea. There you go. So yeah, but how you've structured this and the people you've had, because of course I watch everyone with me supposedly being the second one. it's amazing because I just watch the people and their stories. And I said, this is exactly, and that's what I said to you. Anytime you come across someone with a story or anyone out there who's got an amazing story, let me know, because I'd love to film it. Yeah. I'd love to fit it in something, if it's a TV show, if it's something, a doco and all that too, because it inspires people. You know, these guys who are doing, and I remember it was actually a kid in Wollongong, one of the first people I spoke to before I started doing the bodybuilding. And I think he was 17, 18, 19. He was in Wollongong.
Yep.
Your neck of the woods. He was working at IGA in Wollongong. He was going to University of Wollongong. He had a girlfriend. He was living at home, eating. And I said, man, he was a wrestler. Sorry. Coming into Sydney, doing his training. I said, how the hell? He says, it's my passion. I love it. I'm not going to stop until I'm famous, but I'm not going to stop until I can do what I want to do and I'm happy doing it. And I said, man, that gave me the first idea for the first story. Why shouldn't I be doing this? This is capturing this. And because if this poor kid can do it and he's doing 1,000 things, why can't that guy over there who's sitting on the couch eating potato chips or something,
yeah,
why can't he be doing it too? So that was my whole method of madness, I guess.
It's the same premise pretty much behind this.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's just showing people that everyday people are out there fucking doing what you want to do.
Exactly, exactly. And it should be like that. It should be like that instead of all the negative shit that we see. What about the good stories and the positive stories,
yeah,
man, you know?
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, I like that. Is that your name of your podcast?
Nah, that's mainstream media for you.
No, I love it. I love it, man.
Because it's true. If it's if it's not gory or it doesn't, it's not scary, it doesn't get views.
Well, Who wants to see happy things, man? Who wants to see happy stories? Exactly. People want to see miserable.
We're starting to see a change, though. We're starting to see a change, slowly but surely.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It's just, but everybody's their own director, producer, cameraman now, and all that.
Exactly.
And it's very different. Like I said, I think back, you know, how many years ago when I was at the studio, if they had it. It would have been totally different. I mean, my God, social media. I mean, they do it now. But again, you know, going ahead how many years later, I mean, MGM's owned by Amazon now. All the streaming companies are buying the studios. Studios, there aren't any studios anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's all Paramount there and all that. But there's too many, and it's always been like that. There's too many fish in the pond. You know, you can't have too many medium to small fish. Now you got to start putting them together and you have these one big fishes and all that. And that's the thing. I mean, I'm like, holy shit. But the streaming companies have all the money now.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Where do you see it going? Do you think streaming's just going to have a strong foothold for a while, or what do you think next?
Yeah, good question, mate. I don't know. I just think streaming, it's so huge now. Something else is going to have to happen. You know, free to air TV was on for what, since the 40s, let's say 50s. Took a big run though. I mean, we'll probably be dead by then, by the time that something else happens. But I think something else will start happening. Like something else will start happening soon to supersede streaming. Even though streaming's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You can go anywhere in the world. You can watch whatever you want. The fees are somewhat okay. I love when they raise the fees in Canada, then they raise them here.
I'll tell you what, this is a funny story.
Yeah.
The other morning, I was in my son's room with my partner, and she's turned on the TV to put, I think it was Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And the first thing that pops up is price rise.
Of course.
So it's gone from whatever the price rise was the $17 or something a month. No worries, just click it. Accept whatever. Turns out my partner watched a TikTok video later that day, and it was Paramount Plus had put this notification on everyone's thing, but it wasn't a price rise. It was to put everyone to their premium one.
Oh.
So it was like, it was set out as if you had to click okay to keep watching this.
Wow.
Right? But once we clicked okay, we could go back into the settings and put it back to, I think it was $10 a month or whatever.
Wow.
And it was like, how many?
Wow.
Especially from such a large company, that is, that's strange. That was, I couldn't believe it. For them to pull a Swiftie and put up a for the premium.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a price rise at all. It was them getting people under the premium.
It, yeah. But who's it being done by? Is it being done by a third party? I don't
know. Who knows? You but know. I just thought it was, that's
yeah, don't, that's a thing. Oh, look at anything now. I mean, the world is fucking crazy, bro. And I'm getting spam all the time. I'm getting spam from banks. I'm getting spam from, FedEx, you know, deliver all every day. I keep getting, and I'm like, how do you know what's real and what's not, other than sending it to the bank or whatever, saying, look, is this real? Is this phishing? Is this the, you don't know what to believe anymore. So,
it's not even that. I don't answer phone calls if it's a number that I don't have saved. Yeah. Yeah. If you're that important, you will message me or you will leave a voicemail.
Yeah, but isn't that it's sort of a comment of society right now? That
because I'm with Optus too. I think it's just been leaked everywhere.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, Optus had a few problems, didn't they?
Yeah.
with their service in the last year and then a couple months ago, I think, too. Yeah. But yeah, again, are we getting too much? Too much? I think back in did they say, was it the Jetsons? Back in 1962, Hanna-Barbera Animation, because I love, cartoons and stuff. And they were, the Jetsons, like the Flintstones back in the prehistoric time. They were the future. And everything that they had on it came true. Sort of like the Simpsons. Everything that they've come up with has happened. Like Trump's become president. But just all on the Jetsons, talking on your phone, as in on your TV, doing that, the robots, and it's just unbelievable how people actually perceive the future, which actually happened to some wacko things that didn't happen. But I'm positive for a change in the industry, for something else to happen. I don't know if I want to learn anything. I just want to win Lotto and retire and never have to work again. So that would be kind of fun.
I think technology just keeps expanding, and it's not going to stop anytime soon.
Well, what about sports? I mean, we haven't even touched on sports. That'll be part two, the next one. but no, look at sports now. And man, I mean, even when I went home, a ticket was like $240-250. And we're talking for hockey and these are season tickets that I got. Like, are you kidding? And we're not talking front row. We're talking the middle of, middle bleachers.
But that's season tickets.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty standard for here too.
Yeah. But
I think
but come on. So who get the kids out there who want to see it? How the hell are kids gonna? Well,
yeah, I know. My
kids probably have more money than we do. But
my membership was $600 for the year for the club I follow.
And how many games?
I can go to any game they play, but
right.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that obviously you got to get your way to the game.
Of course.
But $600 a year.
That's okay. That's not still though.
I think you get a scarf and a lanyard.
That's for footy though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but how many? Well, I was gonna say, how many games are we talking?
I think what is that? 26 a year? 27 a year?
Well, that's Australia though.
Yeah, but you get a couple of buys.
They go broke in North America. Yeah. I remember we did a movie called The Cutting Edge. This is 1991. It was a hockey movie, and it was fun. And Paul Michael Glazer, who if people know, he was Starsky and Hutch. He was on the TV show. He directed it.
Yeah.
And he was in Toronto filming it. Actually, it was in Hamilton. It was about an hour outside. And I remember it very well, going to set and all that. And they used cardboard figures because they're trying to keep the budget low of audience and all that too, and they promoted it in every urban in Canada, St. Catharines and Brockville, and very urban hockey centers, where you would see kids getting up playing hockey and all that. And they had all word of mouth screenings, and it did actually quite well. And the movie was kind of fun. I actually enjoyed it. And I just thought, wow, what if those people? How do you get those people now? Those kids who are probably they're all adults and have kids and grandparents probably. How do you get these kids to hockey games now? How do these kids go to sports? How
That's
do they
the
go to
thing.
Professional? I'm not talking, semi-professional and all that too. Oh my God, like, come on. Like someone's making the money, the CEOs are making the money. Someone's making the money. That's ridiculous. And yeah, there's giveaways on radio, but Come on, guys.
That's the saddest thing, though, because if you look NRL in particular, most of the best players that come up through the NRL are disadvantaged kids. And when I was growing up, we could watch every game on free-to-air. Now I think they've got one game on Friday and one on Sunday that they can watch.
Correct.
That's it.
Correct. It's a business now, man.
But that's, the thing, the funniest thing, they were bragging about what the league made last year. And it was...
Did they actually make a profit?
Yeah, I think
it was.
Or do
they say they don't make a profit?
I think it was like, I forget the number, but it was less than Ronaldo's salary. That's really? For the whole league.
What happened during COVID, during that? They still aired the... they stopped at the beginning, but then they aired the game. No audience, if I remember.
Yeah, they had...
same with basketball.
They had the fake audience.
They had that in North America too.
With the fake audience?
With
the cheering?
Some of them... Was it hockey or basketball that had the fake? I can't remember.
It was.
But one of them did.
Whatever it is, weird.
But they were covered too. They covered the seats up with sort of like a
banner.
A banner. But it was massive.
Advertising.
Just the Raptors logo covering like 90%. And the only people who were there were the coaches, the players. And you could see them sitting there and all that too. But I do remember the soundtrack.
That bubble stuff.
How stupid was that?
Yeah, they tried to do that bubble. It's never going to work. Yeah. You're going home to your family, it's not going to work.
Of course not. But yeah, that was interesting.
Runners through the... What was it like to migrate here? Because you were on your own, weren't you?
Yeah. Sure was.
Was it lonely at times?
Not at all. Not at all. One thing especially about Sydney, if you want to be by yourself, you can be by yourself. If you want to be with people, you can be with people. There's so many tourists and transient people coming in and out and all that. And I never was. I mean, I was actually waitering and bartending when I first got here, sending out resumes.
Trying to live.
Trying to live.
Trying to survive.
And I was fine. I was living with the eastern suburbs, actually. Not that it meant anything, but we were living in a very old house which got knocked down. I think there was three of us, and I was paying $100 a week. Yeah. And it was good because it was already furnished and all that too. $100 a week, can you imagine?
$100 a week wouldn't even get you a hostel. Yeah.
And that was in Willara. That was in the eastern suburbs, man. So I was like, holy shit. Not knowing what's the eastern suburbs to the western suburbs to the Shire. I didn't know anything then. So I just, because I was waitering, and I just went... the guy said, oh, look, we're looking for another flatmate and all that. And it went out fine. And he was a caterer. It got me on a lot of corporate catering, which I never sort of did. Silver, whatever it was called. I can't even remember. The spoons and all that, too. But it was fun. So I did weddings and you do everything. It was kind of fun. And back then, it was quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
Probably more money than I would make in an hour here. But it was actually a lot of fun. I had a great time. It took a while for permanent residency. Again, it was a very different, I think it was John Howard back then too. So very different, climate, let's say, with the Liberal government. And as long as I did everything I had to do and, I got permanent residency, and then, back then it could have changed. I mean, listening to this whole thing of giving these guys who helped out in these Bondi Junction thing, giving them permanent residency or citizenship. And I got my citizenship. I'm a dual citizen now. I think it was about 5 years later. I think at the time you have to be the total amount of time in this country you have to be 5 years or something. You can come and go, but...
Well, the rules a bit different because you're part of... Canada's part of the Commonwealth?
Correct, but it wasn't that much different. I do remember studying because they wanted... And again, it didn't really apply for me because it was applied for people who... don't have English as their first language, I guess.
Yeah.
So I had to study and, the 10 responsibilities and rules of an Australian and all this, like being back in school, it's kind of fun. Actually, no, it wasn't. It was just dumb. I just said, I can't believe I've got to learn all this stuff. And then I remember going, filling out the application, went to wherever it was and handed it in. And I thought, oh, okay, where's the test going to be? Is it a classroom? Are we going to? And then all they said to me is, how do you want to pay for this? I went, Well,
it's just some money.
How do you want to pay for it? I think it was $185 for the application or whatever it was, and then I get my my passport. And again, fortunately, having a Canadian and Australian passport is not any different. I can't get into anywhere in the world that my Canadian passport or the Australian wouldn't be able to take me. Yeah. You know? So, but traveling is a fucking pain in the ass because you have to show both, especially when you're going into the States. Because I think they sort of don't like, and again, I'm usually in transit or only in LA for a few days or Florida or wherever I am. And they don't like you having two passports. And, you know, they're always, well, you know, how come there's no visa? Because I look at my Canadian. How come there's no visa in there for Australia? I said, because I have a passport. I have an Australian passport. That's why there's no visa.
Mm.
So when I leave here, you show them both. You leave whatever Canada states, you show them both. So that's the only... Not a big deal, but a bit of a hassle.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of a hassle.
What gets Jeff up in the morning? What makes you tick?
Not right now. It does nothing. This show did today. mate, I just love... I love filming, man. I love telling stories. I just like thinking today's going to be... And even this morning, I was talking to this guy through a friend saying, tell me your story. What's your story about actually boxing? As well, and he's in Melbourne, and I said, I'll let you know when I'm next time in Melbourne, and maybe we can catch up and, you know, film some stuff or, you know, whatever. That's what I like. It's the passion, yeah. Man. People don't have passion anymore. I think people just think it's too easy because everything's social media, and it's like, oh, here, take a picture. There you go. There's your thing. It's like, yeah, but there's more than that. I just like telling stories, and I like getting good stories from people. And working with positive people, man. I mean, we talked about this forever, which is how you're giving a plug to your Big Bull supplements and all that too. I just said, you know, you just want to work with positive people, man. You just want to work with hungry people. You want to work. You don't want to work with negative people, naysayers. And my favorite line, which I love saying all the time, which is funny how we met, because it's sort of in your brand, is, you know, I just want to work with people who have bigger balls than I do, and mine are fucking humongous, because I just go out there and I do it. I don't think of the negative things. I just said, let's just get things done. So I think that everyone should be like that and just get rid of the negativity now, man.
Well, it's how important is it to get rid of negative? How important is it?
It's important because you can't survive, man. You can't survive. I mean, look, we talked about all the shit, you know, the negative stuff of COVID and all that too. And look, again, I just said no one knew what was going on. So you look at the leaders, and who's ever said leaders are always right?
Yeah.
You know, but you just assume and all that too. So, you know, you learn, you da-da-da, and you just move on and all that too. And I think it's kind of cool talking about all these past things because I haven't gone down memory lane in quite some time. Since yesterday. Now I haven't talked about the studios and all that stuff in years, man. And it's usually when I bump into somebody or I talk to somebody who's still doing that, working in LA. And there's not that many people still. A lot of people just branch off and sort of do their own thing. And things come up. And remember when we did that? Remember that? It's like, oh yeah. So yeah, I think just being around positive people, man, like yourself. Because we've had a great time so far. And we haven't even touched the surface with all the shit that we're going to, because there's a lot. And I love how you sent that little diagram to me last night. And I went, yeah, I do, because I was going to, oh, yeah, that's right. But I remember when you did that on the phone, your little sketch drawing of things to come. So, and there will be. There's going to be a lot to come, man. Because you're just... and not knowing the boxing industry, and you've helped me with that too, because, you know, I just shot that. You saw, I don't know if you saw, I just posted, I think yesterday, the amateur thing that was down in Blacktown. And that was kind of fun. And I love that too, because you're talking to the young guys and the old guys. There's the gentleman there, older too, it's their passion. I've always wanted to be a boxer, and they're 40 and they're doing it.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Exactly.
Good for you.
The thing, people... I don't know. They let life hold them back. They're just
it's hard. I mean, again, when you're, and this is how I say, how do you balance, like, yourself? You know, you've got responsibilities. You can't just sort of take up and say, oh, I'm going to go to Africa and go on a safari. I mean, you've got to pay the bills. You got mortgages. You got a family. So I get that, and of course it's like that too. But never forget your dream. And I think that's the whole thing when people. You know, oh, I should have done that when I was in my 20s and 30s and 40s. And they just, just keep pushing it back and saying, you can do it anytime. So when I meet these athletes, like I said, a dude, it was 40. Another guy in Melbourne last year, and I went, he was 60. And he's been doing it for years, bodybuilding. I went, oh my God. Like, and I'm talking to a 15-year-old kid and his mother, which was great. And then I'm talking to a 60-year-old and his partner. I was like, this is just amazing. Look what they're doing. And everybody in between. And it's a passion. And you know what? They're like, I never want to be able to say, I never want to hear myself saying I couldn't do that, that it's too late, I can't do it. Because it's never too late. You can do whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You can do whatever. You know,
honestly, never too late.
Yeah, and it's not. And I don't know. I just like to keep on doing what I'm doing. And win lotto one day would be kind of nice.
I think the aim of the game is just to get around people with the same vision and balls to the wall.
Exactly.
Get it done.
Big ball series, man. That's it.
The way I like to finish, Jeff, is your favorite quote and what it's given you for your life.
Oh, gosh. Favorite quote is actually, it's a quote, and I can't remember who said it, but it was the passing of actor, actress, let's say many, many years ago. And I remember reading it in this epitaph or something like that. And it said, there is no death once you live in the heart of others. And I always thought, what a beautiful thing to say. And it's not just, you know, death of a famous person or whatever. It's just how we treat each other and how we should be to each other. You know, people die, unfortunately, but think of the good things and you don't think of the bad things. Look at the gentleman who just passed away and look at all the good he did, even though he went through hell with mental health and everything else. As long as you're remembered, you know, because judgment day, not to get to whatever, but you know, when it happens, you just want people remembering you in a nice way. So that's always been my favorite quote.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who said it. Maybe one of your audience will Google it and all that too. I did Google it a while ago and I think I mishmashed it a bit. But that's my favorite quote.
Perfect.
Thank you, my bro.
Cheers, brother.
Thank you, brother.